You're listening to Feminist Current, making waves in the mainstream.
Let me clear space for you to sit beside me. You don't need your back against the wall.
You are listening to Feminist Current. I'm Megan Murphy. Today on the show, I'll be speaking with Holly Griggs Spall, the author of Sweetening the Pill, or How We Got Hooked on Hormonal Birth Control. In it, she looks at women's experiences with the birth control pill, asking why, while millions of women take it every single day, few really know how this drug works or the potential side effects. I spoke with her over the phone from Los Angeles. Here is that interview.
I wonder if you can talk about when and why you first became interested in researching hormonal contraception.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I think it really, for me, it began when I had a particularly bad experience on Yasmin, which is one very popular at the time brand of pill. And it was the fourth kind of pill I tried over about 10 years. And I started to research this one brand, and from there my research expanded. And I actually ended up, as a journalist, I pitched a piece titled What You Should Know About the Pill to a magazine called Easy Living, and I conducted an interview with Dr. Cynthia Graham. At the base, though, I really wanted to discover for myself why Yasmin had caused me to feel as terrible physically and psychologically as it did. I kind of personally really needed to understand how something that I had previously considered so harmless, or perhaps not really even considered at all, I'd just kind of taken it every day and given it very little thought, how something like that had had such an impact on me.
I found your work interesting, in this book interesting, because on a personal level, like, I've tried lots of different kinds of hormonal birth control over, you know, probably about 10 years or so. And I've never really had a positive experience with it. And, you know, I don't plan on having children, but I'm also not on the pill right now, and I'm never going to go on the pill again, probably. I mean, never say never, but I don't plan on ever going on the pill ever again because of those negative experiences. So I wonder if you can talk about some of the more impactful or troubling stories you heard from women when you were doing interviews and research with regard to their experiences with hormonal contraception.
Yes, and it's interesting because I had a very similar experience, and I also pretty much don't think I want at least my own biological children in my lifetime. And often when you discuss, it's just an interesting point you've made there, because often when you discuss coming off the pill, people assume you're what they call pregnancy ambivalent. And actually, there are a lot of us who really aren't mm-hmm. and do need effective birth control. But yes, in terms of the stories that I've heard, I think there's kind of two categories, I would say. I think the first story I ever heard as I started working in this area that truly affected me was the woman who described her experience of coming off the pill after 10 years as an awakening and life-changing. And she is a textile designer, and she felt her creativity had been really seriously suppressed when she was on the pill. And she noticed a real, noticeably, you know, a marked difference when she came off. Other women had also started telling me after, you know, I got that story and I wrote the blog, that they felt that transitioning off the pill was like going from living in black and white to colour, and so they felt more engaged and present and connected to the world and others. And at the time that really struck me, and now I'm off the pill and have been for some years, these stories really resonate with me. And then I think on the other category, on the other side of the coin, in terms of impactful stories, are the ones from women who have really been driven to the brink by the psychological impact of hormonal birth control, which is the side effects that I experienced with Yasmin very severely, and what I really was very interested in early on. And, you know, these are women who developed agoraphobia, severe relationship OCD, even had suicidal thoughts. And, you know, women who've seen, you know, their lives ruined by this. And I do actually frequently get emails from women who share their whole story, basically, from start to finish. And I think it just makes them feel a bit better to tell somebody, and you know, obviously they feel validated, I think, by hearing that other women have had similar experiences, and just to know that what they went through isn't all in their heads, and that it was down to the pill that they were taking rather than down to them, as they'd suspected all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, I didn't experience anything super severe, but what I experienced was things like extreme mood swings and kind of feeling crazy and really a loss of libido, which after I started talking to other women, I started learning that that wasn't just my own personal experience and that there were actual correlations between those experiences and the pill. But I wonder if, you know, aside from just hearing these stories, which, you know, of course, women's experiences and stories are valuable and valid, but is there research to back up this kind of thing?
Well, there hasn't been enough research conducted, and I think there ought to be much more. Obviously, the kind of research into especially psychological side effects will be necessary, would involve a large amount of women followed over long periods of time. And that takes a lot of financial backing. And, you know, these kind of side effects are not researched into for a number of reasons, partly, I think, to do with a gender bias in the medical industry, partly to do with the pharmaceutical industry's influence, and partly because, you know, I've been generally seeing taking hormonal contraception is seen as a good compromise, regardless of those kind of side effects that women might experience. So there isn't enough, but there is a very interesting range of studies being done out of Monash University in Australia by a woman called Dr. Kulkarni. And she's doing studies within her clinic, but also more widely as a questionnaire online worldwide. And she's coming up with some interesting research on psychological side effects of the pill. And the handful of studies that there has been have suggested maybe half of women feel they experience negative mood changes because of the pill. But obviously, you know, that's maybe five or six studies that I've been able to get hold of.
And, you know, it's tough because on one hand, the birth control pill is viewed as and held up as a source of liberation for women, and it has been in many, many ways. I mean, the ability to control our own reproduction and to choose if and when we want to get pregnant is huge. But at the same time, sometimes I feel like hormonal birth control hasn't been treated to a fair critique from the feminist movement. And then, of course, there's also that issue of the role of big pharma in the selling of various hormonal drugs for women. And, you know, I don't want to go with that idea that says, you know, natural is better, because, you know, what does natural mean? But, you know, I don't think that prescription pills are necessarily good or necessarily bad. But I think sometimes women aren't fully informed about their choices. And sometimes the pill is presented as the only option in terms of birth control for women. I wonder if you can comment on that a bit, particularly the role of big pharma. And, I mean, is your argument that natural is better and that prescription pills or hormonal birth control is simply not good in terms of options?
I think just to address the feminism and you know, the critique side of it to begin with, I think that my book kind of presents the idea that we've come to see the pill as synonymous with women's liberation, but I'm saying that it's in fact perhaps actually very much a part of the capitalist patriarchal social structure and an extension of the misogyny that's been present in the medical industry for a very long time. So I think, you know, I'm trying to present the idea that there's an ideological connection between feminism, women's liberation, and the pill that prevents us from speaking honestly about the pill. And so you kind of get that view of like being critical of the pill as kind of being a bad feminist in a way. And I think, you know, that's part of it. And I don't think my argument is in the book at all that natural is good and unnatural is bad. And I don't think, you know, that goes really back to the arguments of essentialism. And I'm not trying to tie women's ability to reproduce to their roles and identities in the sense that I'm actually trying to say that women's reproductive cycles are about more than reproduction, and that the cycle serves a purpose beyond pregnancy and beyond producing a baby. And I think I'm actually trying to fight against the idea that women's reproductive systems are only useful and important in terms of pregnancy. You know, I think when you talk about, like, the natural equals good, our natural equals bad argument, that I think I have a lot of issues with the pill, and that's what I write about in the book, but none of them are kind of rooted in this idea of unnatural being bad. My argument's more in line. I guess the best way to look at it might be to consider the breastfeeding discussion as an example. And, you know, we're seeing more and more widely acknowledged that it might be healthier for the baby that a baby's breastfed, and that might be beneficial for the baby's health in a lot of ways. And, you know, in the same way, we might discuss how, you know, it's important, for example, to get 8 to 9 hours sleep a night in terms of our health. So really my discussion of the pill is more to do with the women's health aspects and what happens when you suppress ovulation long term, what happens when you suppress the menstrual cycle, what happens when you give healthy women with normal, healthy biological functions a very powerful drug that they often take for a long period of their lives and medicalize these functions as standard.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the big pharma connection. I mean, obviously, pharmaceuticals or the pharmaceutical industry is a really huge industry.
I think, obviously, it produces the pills and devices that we're the hormonal pills and devices that we're talking about, and makes a profit off of selling them to women. And it's a billion-dollar industry. We do tend to forget that the pill is a product, and that we are consumers, and that goes for all other hormonal devices too, whether that's the arena or the implant or the shot. And I think we also forget that the pharmaceutical industry is fundamentally driven by money, to make money. It's not driven to serve the best interests and needs of women. If those two things happen to cross over, great, they win. But otherwise, you know, the general motivation is to make money, as it is with any other corporate system. So I think if we think about it that way, we should always have a critical eye on what that industry presents to us. And you know, we also ought to always keep in mind that the pharmaceutical industry has an influence on your doctor that you go and see to discuss these issues. And that doesn't matter whether you're in a for-profit healthcare system or a nationalized healthcare system. There is an influence to an extent across the board. And that's on what research they get to see in terms of what's published and what gets to their desk, on the free samples that they're given to hand out, on what drugs they will recommend, on what they don't recommend for birth control. And it's even been shown that something as simple as getting a pen from a drug representative with the brand name on that pen actually has an influence on how the doctor thinks about the drug. So that influence is very pervasive. And I think, you know, we sort of forget, first of all, that we, you know, it's a product and we should be as vigilant about it, this product as any other product that's being sold to us for the purpose of making money, but also that it is affecting in very insidious ways a lot of our ways that we have the relationships that we have with our care providers and our health practitioners.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, as we mentioned earlier, the fact that women are no longer really enslaved by pregnancy because of options such as abortion and hormonal contraception, you know, that's undoubtedly a positive thing as far as female liberation goes. And I have read some critiques of your book, and some of them from feminists will argue that the book is regressive or even anti-feminist. I wonder how you respond to those kinds of critiques.
Well, the anti-feminist criticisms—it's a bit—that's a little troubling to me. I mean, first of all, you know, there's a long history in the feminist movement, the women's health movement, of critical appraisal of the pill and all other hormonal pills, HRT, a lot of different medications that have been prescribed to women alone. For example, you know, we've got Barbara Seaman, who wrote the Doctor's Case Against the Pill, the feminist who protested at the Nelson Pill hearings in 1970, Carol Downer, who led the self-help movement. And also there are feminists today. You know, this isn't just me who's saying these things. There's a lot of people I mention in the book who are feminists today who are working in this area and advocating for a more critical thinking about hormonal birth control. And, you know, there are people who seem to think that either they don't, I think it's either that they don't know about that history or present concerns and the present view, which I feel, you know, in the current mainstream feminist movement really does see the pill as pretty much a sacred cow. And so that is impacting the lens through which they look at this issue. So I think that, you know, I think the connection between the feminist movement and hormonal birth control is great at the moment in terms of discussion of access to contraception, but I think it's failing to actually seriously address issues of safety currently. I think that's been exemplified probably most clearly, as I write in the book, about with Yasmin Yasmin in recent years. And, you know, I think this just, I think, you know, nobody within the feminist movement can say something. I think saying something anti-feminism suggests, first of all, that disagreements are not allowed within feminism, and I think disagreements make the movement stronger in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, the fact that there's people like you and I who don't want to use the pill but do want to use contraception, you know, want to have access to non-hormonal options, I think that needs to be taken up by the feminist movement, that they need to make sure that all women are getting a range of options and access to them and education about them. And I think, you know, that if we're not being served, I think that's definitely a feminist issue.
Mm-hmm, certainly. I also thought your point that women are encouraged to suppress their monthly ovulatory cycle in order to not miss any days of work, or so as they can remain sexually available. That's a quote from you. I thought that was a really interesting point. I wonder if you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, I think, yeah, that really shows how I'm trying to place the pill into the nexus of patriarchal capitalism, which rather than is something that is associated with liberational revolution, that it's actually very much part of that same system. And, you know, I think what I'm trying to say there really is that, you know, sexual availability is, it's a term that needs more description and more contextualization, because I talk about it in the book not only in terms of women but also in terms of men. And Elizabeth Kissling is kind of my the person that I refer to there, because she writes very well about the neoliberal economy and how there is this message that we should always be on, basically, and always be available. And that works in terms of, you know, longer working hours, the way that we approach work, you know, people checking email all the time, the way that we've developed into this situation where people are working 24 hours a day. The expectation is there, the pressure is on, that's how, you know, that we work and how we engage with our careers. And I think we have that in our sexual lives a lot of the time too. There's this emphasis on quantity over quality, I think is a good way of putting it, which is that we should all, you know, men and women, want and have sex frequently, and that there shouldn't really be a time when perhaps you're not interested. Or, you know, it's all about this consistency and this desire that everybody's kind of the same all the time, that you don't, you know, that you don't ever have an interior, you know, interior moments or times where you want to withdraw. And I think that's kind of part of the way that we're moving as a society across the board. And I think, you know, linking work to the way, you know, availability for work, availability for sex is really about this pressure I feel that all of us feel, men and women, to kind of be on all the time and to be consistent and to be constantly productive too, in all the ways that productivity can be defined.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. despite the negative impacts or experiences of some or even many individual women with the pill and hormonal contraception in general, there are, of course, a lot of women who have had positive experiences or neutral experiences with the pill and feel that it works for them. Are you arguing that they should reconsider their chosen method of birth control?
I would say that my motivation for, you know, writing the book and for the blog and all the work that I've done here in this area has always been to provide validation for those women who have not had positive experiences on the pill, and to create a space for this to be discussed that is pro-woman, feminist, non-religious orientated, sex-positive space for that to be discussed. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, if women were going to go through the side effects that I did, the depression, the anxiety, that they would be able to consider that it might be the pill causing them. I always wanted to work towards a situation where women wouldn't have to suffer unnecessarily in the way I did due to not making that connection. But I do think if you are having a positive experience on hormonal birth control, you feel that you haven't had any issues with it, that, you know, we must always consider, you know, there's a prerequisite to making informed choice. And I think informed choice is necessary rather than just choice. And I think that prerequisite is body literacy, as I talk about this in the book quite a bit, is this, you know, I think to make a conscious, informed decision about your birth control, there is a necessity to know a bit somewhat about how your body works, your menstrual cycle, your fertility, and that makes a really good basis for making any decision about contraception or cycle health, and whatever you choose to do beyond that. I think it's important to know about the alternatives that are available so that you can make a truly informed choice, whether that's the cervical cap to fertility awareness method, and alternatives for any cycle health issues that you might be using the pill for, because that, you know, often it's acne or heavy periods or a lot of different reasons that women use the pill. And I think, you know, I think I really align myself with a group that I talk about in the book, which is the Feminist Women's Health Clinics, which was started by Carol Downer. And they always want the people who come to their clinics to leave with much more information than they came to them with. And once they have that information, they then support them to make whatever choice they want to make. And they provide all of those choices at the clinic. And I think, you know, even if women feel that what their experience is currently is good, they still deserve to know about how the pill works, how their own bodies work, their cycles work, and, you know, what it means to take the pill every day for their bodies. I think, you know, if you're healthy and you're taking a drug every day, that really makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's alternatives in terms of birth control methods that aren't being explored that we should be exploring more?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, in the concluding chapters of my book, I write a lot about what I found worked for me in terms of giving me the confidence to transition off the pill, and also providing an effective form of birth control and a good foundation for me to make my own choices about contraception, and that's the fertility awareness method, and you know, that's also known as the symptothermal method, and it's basically women tracking changes in their body through the month through signs of fertility. So that's your basal body temperature, your cervical mucus, and sometimes people add in cervix position as well, so they can come to understand that, you know, when their fertile period is and when they are infertile, which is for the majority of the month. And that was a real key moment for me in my own education, to understand that I had times in the month when I wasn't fertile and times when I was. And I think that really provided a good foundation for me to transition in the way that I did, and after 10 years of taking the pill. And has served me very well. And now I use that, and I use condoms and naturally derived spermicides, because chemical spermicides are not great. And I think we aren't talking enough about that. And I think we're seeing more and more women wanting to come off the pill, not wanting to use hormonal birth control for a lot of really good reasons. And I think, you know, they're going into a space now where we're not really providing enough education about alternatives, and I think this foundation of body literacy, of fertility awareness, is essential, and I really would love to see it more democratized, provided through, you know, the channels that we now get our contraception advice and information, and to just have it as something that women learn through school, through college, and are able to use, whether for, it ends up being for contraception, contraceptive purposes, for the just health purposes, or just as a foundation for making decisions from there.
Mm-hmm. Great. I think we've covered a lot. I wonder if there's anything important that you'd like to add.
Yeah, I would like to just mention that, you know, I am actually working on a documentary right now, and it's based on my book, and we're really kind of seeing it as a way of exploring the alternatives for women, what does work for them in terms of non-hormonal options. We're following different women as they make those choices and go on that learning curve to find out what fits best in their lives. And we're still looking for more women to cast in the Southern California area, and we're also looking for interviewees and people who are interested in this topic to collaborate with. And so that's something that I have some information about on my website, sweeteningthepill.com, and it's something that's kind of my next project, really. It's like the second part to the book. I feel where I leave off is, you know, what worked for me and my desire to promote body literacy, and then I want to explore what works for women in the real world, whether these non-hormonal options are accessible, are usable, and how maybe those things could be improved too in terms of the people who are providing non-hormonal options.
And so are you asking that women in the Southern California area get in touch with you?
Are casting. We have two women cast right now, but if women in the Southern California area, if you'd like to be involved in a documentary about exploring non-hormonal birth control options, then that would be, you know, do get in touch, because that's something that we really want to expand. We want to follow maybe between 6 to 8 women, and the commitment really is only a few days over the course of a year, but I think it would be nice to have a really good range of women that we can talk to about this.
Great. And how can they get in touch with you?
Through my website, sweeteningthepill.com. I have all my information up there, including the one sheet for the documentary.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much again for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been really interesting reading about your work and talking with you today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
You just heard an interview with Holly Griggs-Ball, the author of Sweetening the Pill, or How We Got Hooked on Hormonal Birth Control. For more information on the book and Holly's work, visit sweeteningthepill.com. That is all the time we have for today. I'm Megan Murphy. Thanks for tuning in to Feminist Current. Feminist Current is a syndicated show produced by Megan Murphy out of Vancouver, BC, Canada. For more information on the show, please visit www.feministcurrent.com. If your station would like to air Feminist Current, you can find episodes at audioport.org or email us at info@feministcurrent.com.